Welcome back to Labor Law Radio. I'm your host, Michael Tracy, attorney at law, with the second half of our segment on wrongful termination. If you do have any questions or comments, you can send them to me at www.laborlawradio.com. There will be a link there to send emails in, or you can call us toll-free at 888-678-7229, and we'll try to get to some of your questions. You know, right now we're covering wrongful termination. We pick up a different topic each week. The first half of the segment, we sort of talked about the problems with pursuing wrongful termination claims in general, you know, the at-will status of employment in California and how that severely limits types of claims that that you can bring for wrongful termination. But what we didn't get into, you know, what we did discuss was that anything, you know, the employer can terminate you at any time for any reason or no reason at all, as long as it's not an illegal reason or a wrongful reason. But we haven't gotten into exactly what a wrongful reason is. And that's what we're going to cover right now. So basically, in order to be terminated wrongfully, it has to be because of one of the following reasons. And then that's it. So if it's not based on your age, ancestry, color, religion, disability, marital status, certain types of medical conditions, your race, gender, or sexual orientation, then it's not going to be a wrongful termination. Now, there's certain other protected activities that they can't terminate you for as well. They can't terminate you for taking certain types of protected medical leave, FMLA leave, serving on a jury, also whistleblowing if you reported the company for a safety violation or a labor violation or any other infraction of the law. That would be protected, and they could not terminate you for reporting that to the government. But anything else that's not on that list is perfectly legal for them to terminate you for. So that's the extent of wrongful termination. And that gives rise to, you know, the main defense used by employers for a termination is that they always claim it was anything but one of the things on that list. Favorite case of mine, or an interesting case of mine, was the Oakland Raiders defense. It was a couple of, I think, five African-American employees were terminated from their job, brought a claim for wrongful termination based on their race. And the employer's defense was they weren't terminated because they were black. We terminated them because they were Oakland Raiders fans. Apparently, they were avid Oakland Raiders fans, maybe disgusted at work, and that they didn't like Oakland Raiders fans, and so they wanted to terminate them from their job because they were Oakland Raiders fans. You know, the merits of that, I don't know if you're an Oakland Raiders fan or not, but essentially the court held that if that were true, then the termination would be lawful. I mean, as ridiculous as it sounds, the company can terminate somebody for rooting for the Oakland Raiders because it is an at-will employment. The plaintiff still had the right to put on the argument that it was a pretext, that that wasn't the real reason that they were fired, that the real reason that they were fired was that they were African-American, it was race-based, and that would be a wrongful termination. But that's the plaintiff's burden to prove, and simply because you are in one of these protected categories doesn't mean you automatically have a case or that the burden shifts to the defendant to prove that it was a proper termination. You still have the entire burden to prove that it was a wrongful termination and, you know, overcome whatever pretext that the employer comes up with. And some of the things that they do come up with are rather colorful. You know, I know in the first part we said they can fire you for no reason at all, but realistically, juries just don't believe that, you know, the company terminated somebody for absolutely no reason. Just on a whim, they flipped a coin and decided who to fire. That's not the way companies work, and juries know it. So the company almost always puts on some reason why they had terminated. I mean, most of the time, it's not so frivolous as being Oakland Raiders fans. Normally, it's because of poor performance, because of you know, an attitude problem or a lack of motivation or something job related. They usually don't go for something quite as frivolous as their sports fans, sports team that they're rooting for. But in any case, if it's anything that's not on that list, you know, age, ancestry, color, race, religion, the protected characteristics, then it's perfectly legal. Now, most of these apply to states other than California. California is fairly unique in a couple ways, mainly with regards to sexual orientation. That is, you know, you know, what you choose to present yourself as. And there's been a number of interesting cases there, especially where heterosexual males have been misclassified or mislabeled as homosexual males. And those have given rise to causes of action. So interestingly enough, your actual sexual orientation is not the sole factor in it. It's simply your perceived or your accused sexual orientation. So there was a case where somebody was believed to be a homosexual when in fact he wasn't, and he had been terminated for that. The employer tried to put on the defense, well, he wasn't really gay after all, so we couldn't possibly have terminated him for being gay, but it was actually his perceived sexual orientation. So there are some, and that's a developing area of law. I mean, some cases go back and forth on that, and that's certainly not a fixed area of California law. So, you know, gender and race and the other ones have been litigated for years and years and years and are pretty well established. So, you know, those are the basics of wrongful termination. I will point out as well in terms of age that it's important to note that you must be over 40 years old in order to suffer age discrimination. So if you're 25 and they hire somebody who's 35 or somebody who's 18, that may be based entirely on race. But unless that you are over 40 years old, you will not be able to assert a claim for wrongful termination. So a big one in these are age, you know, race, and gender. Gender discrimination is pretty rampant, and there's a number of good cases on that that sort of highlight what the burden of proof is from the plaintiff's perspective. And it is fairly difficult. And I want to cover an older case here that's been sort of highlights some of the issues and problems with proving wrongful termination, because your termination has to be because of one of these particular characteristics. In the case I'm going to talk about right now, it has to be, you know, caused by your gender. It's not simply enough that you be, in this case, it was a female. It's not simply enough that you be treated poorly and that you're a woman. It has to, the two things have to be related. You have to have been treated poorly because you were a woman or because of your race. In this case, it was a casino worker, and her supervisor had done all sorts of terrible, you know, verbal things to her. There was never any physical contact or anything like that. But he had accused her of having oral sex with customers in front of other customers. She had told her in terms of her performance review that she would need to negotiate her raise with him in a hotel room, obviously implying that there was going to be some type of sexual tit for tat in that. He was joking about it. He wasn't actually implying that, but also extremely derogatory language was used. I can't use it here on the radio, but if you read the court opinion, the F word is used 8 times inside the court's opinion, not the transcripts. I have it you know, hundreds of times, but inside the court of appeals opinion, the F word is used 8 times. The C word is used 3 times, and there's various combinations of those two words that were all attributed to this supervisor of hers that were used. So eventually, this poor employee quit her job and brought an action for wrongful termination, sexual harassment. Prior to quitting, she had lodged a complaint, and they had transferred the supervisor away, and there are some other facts that we'll get into in a second. But ultimately, her claim for wrongful termination was denied. She lost on that particular issue. So even with severe things like this, it doesn't mean you're automatically going to win for a wrongful termination. And the reason why she lost is that because she had quit her job, and I had talked about that in the first half of the hour, was the constructive discharge. You know, she had to rely on a theory of constructive discharge because she had quit, and that's a very high burden. In this case, she lost out on that primarily because she waited about 2 months from when all of this extremely harassing conduct was going on until she finally turned in her termination. And in between that time, she had been reassigned another boss. The new boss had essentially given her some performance standards that she thought was unrealistic, and given her a performance and evaluation under circumstances that she felt she couldn't possibly succeed. And she felt that she was being set up to fail and that they were setting her up to fire her. So she preemptively simply quit before they could fire her. And that's the classic mistake that plaintiffs make in wrongful termination cases. If you think they're setting you up to fire you, it's probably better just to let it happen rather than preempting them and quitting. And when you quit, you lose a substantial portion of the value of your wrongful termination claim. It's much more difficult to prove a constructive discharge. And even in the case of, you know, severe abusive language that was going on in that case, you can still lose on your wrongful termination claim. Now, she was successfully able to continue with her sexual harassment claims and hostile work environment, but there's a lot of advantages to an actual wrongful termination in terms of what remedies you can get and what type of damages you're going to get out of the employer. So even in extreme cases, it's best to weather the storm all the way through to the bitter end and you know, get terminated rather than relying on a theory of constructive discharge. But what's really interesting about this casino worker case is that it essentially established this defense that's now known as the equal opportunity harasser. The defendants in that case didn't say, well, you know, she was harassed because she was an Oakland Raiders fan or something like that. They said, we know that this boss is a complete jerk. But he is a jerk to everybody. He picks on black, white, male, female, old, young. He hates them all equally and is abusive and condescending and rude to absolutely everybody on the planet. This guy is the biggest jerk that there is, and he did commit all of these egregious acts that are alleged by the plaintiff and did use all these bad names for her. But he also used just as bad names and just as horrible things on just about everybody, including males, including blacks, including whites, young, old. This guy hated everybody. And that was their defense. And at the trial court level, it succeeded. Now, there's three levels of courts in, you know, this was a federal case, so it would go to the federal district courts, the first level, that's the trial court. If you don't like the opinion there, you can take it up on appeal. The Court of Appeals can overturn that. If you don't like the Court of Appeals, then your last resort is the United States Supreme Court, which of course doesn't, you know, each stage of that hears less and less cases. The Supreme Court hears very, very few cases each year. So at the trial court level, the trial court judge agreed and said she hasn't really stated a cause of action here. She can't prevail on these claims because she hasn't shown that she was singled out because of her gender. Remember, wrongful termination, you know, sexual discrimination has to be because of your gender. It's not enough that you be called bad names. They have to be called names because of their gender. So that was essentially the defense, and defense attorneys have been using that defense ever since. It's a one of the biggest defenses that that you see, especially when the conduct is extremely egregious, and then there's just no way that the you know, if the jury gets it, you know, the defendant is going to be in trouble. And what they try to do is keep this information from getting to the jury by doing something what's known as a motion for summary judgment and saying, even if everything that the plaintiff is saying is true, we have enough evidence to show that he was an equal opportunity harasser or equal opportunity discriminator, and that that is enough to defeat their claims. Fortunately, the Court of Appeals took a different look at it. And he said, the judge at the appellate court said, it's not so much, you know, was he mean to everybody? Did he say condescending things to everybody? But were the types of things he's saying, were they specific towards women? So the type of language that he used towards women was very specific towards them and meant a different thing to a woman than it did to a man. So, you know, in general, this will come up a lot in terms of, you know, the sexual innuendo, and that is women are going to take that in a different way than men are. Maybe men might take it as joking and women might take it as offensive. And that would be enough to establish a wrongful termination or a hostile work environment or harassment. In particular, what the judge had found was, you know, the use of different words and how they were applied to women. And in particular, he said, it's one thing to call a woman worthless, and it's a different thing to call a woman a worthless broad. And the first one, presumably would be legal and not actionable. You can call somebody worthless, you can call anybody worthless, and as long as you haven't singled out women, you call everybody worthless, then you're an equal opportunity harasser, and that is legal. However, when you use terms such as worthless broad, which has a definitely condescending notion towards women, then that will single it out, and that type of action is being caused by their gender, and that is enough to give rise to a claim for a sexual harassment, hostile work environment, and ultimately wrongful termination if it rose to the level that wrongful termination requires. A lot of times, if it doesn't rise to the level of wrongful termination, that is, you quit, but it wasn't an actual constructive discharge, or they don't actually terminate you and you're still working there, you can still pursue a claim for a hostile work environment or sexual harassment, but not ultimately on wrongful termination. So there is a fine line here. This conversation today focuses on wrongful termination rather than a hostile work environment, but the two are very related, and you generally see that if you don't prevail on the wrongful termination, you may still have a claim for the hostile work environment. Okay, so what I'd like to do now is look at a couple recent cases in this area of the law and see what the issues there were, how it relates to what we had discussed, and you know what makes these cases particularly good cases, because a lot of the stuff we talked about why these cases are so difficult and why they're difficult to prevail on. First case, a federal case, comes out of Chicago. McDonald's is the defendant. Asian American woman is the plaintiff. She worked there as an accountant for 2 or 3 years before she was terminated. Her immediate supervisor was a Caucasian, and the two supervisors above her, sort of the two levels above that in the chain of command, were African American. Now, the plaintiff had complained about unfair treatment based on her race about 6 months into her job, and shortly thereafter was placed on an improvement plan, which she allegedly failed to meet the requirements of, and was terminated shortly thereafter. And when she was terminated, she was replaced by an African American. Now, what makes this case a little bit interesting is that the allegation was that the plaintiff, the Asian American, was discriminated against by the African Americans. The allegations were that there was a African American social networking group that was designed to promote blacks within the organization, and that these people used this networking group to exclude non-African Americans and to give blacks favorable work assignments. And in this particular case, the plaintiff did a number of things right in order to survive this this motion and be able to proceed on to trial. And that is that she had a fairly good documentation in terms of that she showed that she had a very good work record prior to her complaints of discrimination. And after that, she had a successive documentation of what she felt were unfair the unfair treatment of her, and ultimately she stuck it out until the bitter end, and they did terminate her, so she doesn't have to worry about constructive discharge. So a number of interesting issues in that case, and it does just go to show that no matter what your race is, or no matter what your protected characteristic is, the law is there to ensure that everybody is fairly treated, even if the people doing the alleged discrimination are also minorities. The important thing is that the law is that nobody should lose their job based on their race, no matter who it is. So an interesting case, and I'll be interested to see what happens at the actual trial on that one. Okay, I had one more case I wanted to cover here, an age discrimination case for women over 40 working at a nightclub. It is fairly interesting, but looking at our time constraints, it doesn't look like I will have time to get to it. So I will save it for a future broadcast and come back to it at some point, because it is fairly interesting and does highlight some of the issues that that face people bringing these types of claims. Okay, so let's get to some of our questions that listeners have sent in. The first question reads, last week my boss calls me into his office and tells me that he is letting me go. A friend of mine who is still working for the company has told me that he hired his mother to fill my position. I worked with his mother at this job 2 years ago, and she was completely stupid and could not do anything without my help. Is there anything I can do about this? Well, you can find another job and take that one and get on with your life. But legally, there does not appear to be anything wrong with this. This was, we discussed in depth, I mean, there's only certain types of actions that give rise to a legal claim against an employer for wrongful termination, you know, age, race, color, religion, disability, sexual orientation, etc., that's not going on here. If somebody wants to hire their mother, that's their own internal business decision. It doesn't really relate to any of the protected characteristics that that we discussed. So, and what it gets into is that there is no legal requirement that an employer act fairly, or that the employer run their business in a professional manner, or that they run their business in even in an efficient manner. You know, there's no law that requires that a company adhere to good business policy. California is still a free market economy, and the way the law looks at it is that if companies make bad business decisions, they're going to lose money, they're going to go out of business. If you're a good employee, then you're going to go work for one of his competitors and add value to that company, and they're going to put this company out of business. And those things are largely left up to the market to determine, not going in through legal means. Also, if you think about it, I mean, it's just, you know, control over your own money. I mean, when you personally, if you go into the store to buy a product, you have complete discretion over what you want to buy. I mean, if you go and, you know, you're going to go buy a bottle of Pepsi, and a Coke salesman comes up to you and says, you don't want to buy that bottle of Pepsi. It's not as good as my bottle of as Coke. And I can scientifically prove that my bottle of Coke is better than that bottle of Pepsi. They can't sue you for buying that bottle of Pepsi, because it's your decision. It's your money, and you can do and spend with it however you like. So the same thing here. It's the employer's money, and if he wants to give it to his mother, who may be completely incompetent, that's perfectly legal. If he wants to give it to you because you're a good employee, perfectly legal. If he wants to terminate you, you're at will. There was nothing in here that indicated you that you had an employment contract with him, that there was some guarantee that he would continue to use your services. So he is perfectly perfectly within his rights to terminate you and hire his mother. So I'm sure his mother appreciates that. Anyway, next question, moving on. I gave my boss 2 weeks' notice, and he fired me the next day. Can I sue for the 2 weeks' pay? That's an interesting question. It's not quite a typical wrongful termination type of a situation, because you'd really, you know, even if it were a wrongful termination, you know, you were going to quit in 2 weeks anyway. But you probably don't have a right to that 2 weeks' pay, because the only way you'd have a claim for those 2 weeks was if there was some type of employment contract or some obligation that required the employer to pay you for those 2 weeks. And I don't see anything here. I mean, you simply gave 2 weeks' notice, but that wouldn't change the at-will employment relationship. You know, you couldn't give, well, I gave you a one-year notice, so you can't terminate me for the next year. That wouldn't work. This might, you know, give you a claim for unemployment insurance, because now you were terminated rather than resigning, but whether it would extend beyond those 2 weeks would depend on the facts of your particular situation. But usually the reason why you give 2 weeks' notice is because you already have another job anyway that you're going to take, so unemployment insurance probably wouldn't be relevant in that case. But an interesting question. Moving on, next question was, I was terminated for being accused of soliciting customers for my own business. I never solicited any customers and can prove it. Do I have a case? No, I don't see anything in there. I mean, you were terminated for what may be an unjust reason, maybe something without any evidence, without any basis. It may be unfair, and it may even be a bad business decision. But it wasn't based on your age, ancestry, color, creed, religion, you know, anything like that that we had discussed previously. It wasn't, you know, for being a whistleblower. It wasn't for taking some protected leave, FMLA or jury duty or anything like that. So, again, the employer is entirely within their bounds to run their business however they see fit. And this type of question I get quite frequently, where it essentially elevates the employer to the, you know, to the, you know, obligation of a court or something like that, where they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt before they can terminate you, or they have to produce some type of evidence before they can terminate you. That simply does not exist for the vast majority of employees in California. Again, if you have a union contract, or you have an employment contract that requires that they conduct an investigation, or that they give you a due process before they terminate you, then you can enforce the terms of that contract. But for the vast majority of employees in California, there is no due process that the employer owes them with regards to their employment, and they can be terminated at any time for any reason, even if it is a false accusation such as this, and even if they didn't do due diligence to investigate the accusation, they simply, you know, believed a coworker or completely speculated on it. And even if you can prove to the contrary that you didn't do it, they have no obligation to listen to your case. They can simply terminate you, and they don't even have to give you a reason why they terminated you. In this case, they did, but it's not an illegal reason. It's not a wrongful termination. So, final question we have here. I've been employed with my company for about 3 years. For the last 2 years, I have been telecommuting as there is no local office. Recently, I was told that the telecommuting will no longer be allowed, and I have to relocate to an office in another state or resign. Is this legal? Well, chances are it is. I mean, you've been there 3 years. We talked about, you know, implied contracts. I don't see anything in here that gives rise to an implied contract. I mean, if this employer had said, we're going to allow you to continue this job indefinitely, or we're only going to terminate you for cause. But even then, it sounds like this is more of a restructuring, a large-scale restructuring to the company where they're simply stopping, you know, people from allowing to telecommute. So I don't see anything illegal with this. You know, in terms of whether you have to resign or not, I mean, that's really just an issue for unemployment insurance. In general, the law for that is that the employer can force you to relocate, but if the relocation is unreasonable, then it's not going to be seen as you resigning. It's being going to be seen as the employer not having, you know, adequate work available for you in your local area. I mean, if the office just relocates across the street, you're not going to be able to collect unemployment insurance. But in this case, certainly relocating to another state would be an undue burden on the employee, and you would be able to collect unemployment insurance for that, but would not have a claim for wrongful termination. Okay, that's about all we have to say about wrongful termination, and that should do it for this week's topic. Just to recap, to bring a claim for a wrongful termination, the important things to remember are watch out for after-acquired evidence, make sure you didn't lie or misstate anything on your job application or resume or anything else that the employer could have legitimately fired you for. Make sure you complain about the unfair treatment early and often. Make sure you document everything. Use email as your friend in documenting these things and having your coworkers corroborate your claims early. And if you can, hold out for termination. Don't try to go for a constructive discharge claim. Those are much more difficult to deal with. Now, obviously, I can't cover everything that there is to cover with relation to wrongful termination, so you should consult an attorney before proceeding with any legal action or not proceeding with any legal action. So hopefully this broadcast has been informative to you. If you have any questions, laborlaw.com, www.laborlaw.com, and hopefully I will see you next week. This broadcast has been a commercial advertisement of the law offices of Michael Tracy, not meant to be legal advice, and does not serve to establish an attorney-client relationship. Any statements made during this broadcast are relevant, swear or not, guarantees of any outcome. Michael Tracy is licensed as an attorney only in California.